there, and welcome to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Morehead State University President Dr. Jay Morgan. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, Leanne. Great to be with you.
As usual, it's a busy, busy spring semester here at MSU. We just got through a couple of weeks of really bad winter weather and a week of crazy spring weather with the flooding over the weekend. First, I wanted to talk with you about the process of decision-making when it comes to inclement weather. How do those decisions get made?
Sure. Well, that's a great question. I'm glad you're asking that while the sun is shining. So we have had a terrible round of weather for our region, as many of our listening audience knows, not only local, but also throughout the region and state. Coming off of that, I will say it is great to see sunshine and students moving around our campus, and we have picnic tables out for them to sit on, and feels like life is moving again. But to your question about how we make calls on inclement weather, as you know, we unfortunately were not able to be on campus for 7 or 8 days of classes because of the weather. We have a inclement weather team. It's about 7 or 8 people. Composed mainly of our vice presidents, person from communication, our facilities officer, and also our chief of police. And it'd probably make you cringe a little bit, but we have a 5 a.m. phone call each morning. And during that phone call, we discuss road conditions, weather conditions, campus conditions, activities that are planned throughout the day in each of the vice presidential areas. And then we try to make a kind of a group call. Our goal is to do that each morning by about 6 o'clock and then turn around and have it messaged to our campus through social media, email, website by 6:15. Now, I will say that does not always work perfectly because the weather doesn't always work perfectly, but that's how we normally do it, and we've had a lot of 5:30 a.m. calls lately.
Yeah. Well, I know that the last time that we talked, there was some concern about student retention and, of course, the success of the students because they're dealing with this unprecedented, you know, historic worldwide event. How do you feel like the students are holding up now that we're halfway through this spring semester?
You know, I think it's getting better. And I mention that because you're exactly right. In one of our previous live interviews, I think you and I talked about some of the struggles that our students have had on adapting to college, specifically our freshmen. We have seen in some data that we have that the incoming fall of 21 class of incoming freshmen have had some retention issues. And I think that's probably a product, looking back on it, of just not quite having a normal first-year college experience. It's tough to be a first-year student anyway, even under normal conditions. And COVID obviously, you know, added an extra layer of stress and distress to everyone. I think what we're seeing now is students are beginning to adapt a little bit better. We're hearing better reports from students. I'm talking about just on the sidewalk, verbal communication, that they seem to be adapting better. And also, too, I think a lot of students are seeing, hopefully, better skies on the horizon. There's a general feel like with the vaccine being more broadly available, people doing a great job wearing masks, that cases going down, that maybe there's some blue skies ahead. Not quite for sure when those are, but we certainly look forward to them. But we are paying extra attention to our freshman population.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of vaccines, the campus employees are considered group 1C for vaccinations, which just started at the beginning of this week to open up statewide. And I know that next week, the campus community is going to have a chance to get the first shot here locally. Tell me a little bit about how that came about.
Sure. No, we're very pleased that it seems like the vaccine is being very broadly distributed throughout our state and also community and region. We have been working with what I will call just a wonderful partner, St. Clair Healthcare. So I want to make sure I give a very positive call out to them and their efforts in assisting us as a, you know, as an educational institution. Some time back, we began discussions with St. Clair about hosting some type of formal clinic for our employees to go over and get the vaccine should they want to do that. It's voluntary for our employees, and we've always thought that anything medical is really kind of the domain between the employee and their healthcare provider and their family, and that's the way that we have positioned this. We're encouraging people to do it, but we realize this is a medical piece, and they need to have that conversation with their physician. But to the point around St. Clair, once we started seeing Group 1C starting to come about, we began working with them, and they have a wonderful team. They put together a specialty clinic for us, which will run next Wednesday. We know that, you know, folks have been able to go over to St. Clair and Kroger and other out-of-town venues to obtain the vaccination, and that's great too. We do not want to discourage that, but St. Clair really came to the table. We're going to run several hundred people through a specialty clinic first of next or mid next week, and then they'll receive their second dosage of the vaccination in early April. So while we certainly want people to go, you know, to their local providers and otherwise, if they want to get the vaccine somewhere else, we wanted to make it available in volume, and we believe St. Clair can hold that volume for us. And looking forward to getting that done, hopefully getting the second dose behind us, and then sometime in early to mid-April, we're gonna really take a hard look at campus on. We may not be 100% back to normal, because I think we have, still have a little ways to go here in the pandemic. We'll probably move to a different phase of continuing to be careful, likely probably wearing some masks for some time to come. We haven't really, we're following good public guidance there, medical guidance, but we may try to start doing some things in April and May and June. So, as I said before, I see some blue skies on the horizon.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just the spring optimism coming in, or I mean, I feel like I feel like everybody is really nervous, but in a very positive way about what's happening, especially with the vaccine. And we're all looking forward to kind of returning in some way to something that looks like the before times. I was surprised to hear, but excited to hear, that we are planning at MSU to hold an in-person graduation ceremony this spring.
We are. And before I mention that, I think you pegged this exactly right. About the time the sun came out, about a week ago, it seemed like that, coupled with March 1st and that Group 1C of the vaccine being much more broader than it was in the past, really kind of started to make people in a better mood. And I'm happy to see that. Related to commencement, we are very glad to be able to message that we are probably 95% ready to have an in-person commencement. Few small details to polish off, like, you know, getting an outdoor sound system in place and a couple other logistical things. But we are looking at having a spring commencement that is outside. We're going to host it on the football stadium field, Jane Stadium. Just to give you a quick visual, we're thinking that we're going to limit the ceremony to the actual spring graduate and a very limited number of friends and family per graduate. So it will be a ticketed event. We're going to try to do that just to gently control the numbers. You know, we have a massive amount of people every spring for commencement, and we just don't feel like we're ready to let 5,000 or 6,000 people all congregate in one area at this point. Even though it's outside, we still feel the need for some caution. So we'll probably be a ticketed event. Each spring graduate will be able to come. be able to have a couple of tickets per friends or family, whoever they want to distribute those to. We're going to put the friends and family on one side of the stadium. We're going to put the graduates sitting actually out on the track and on the field, spaced out. And it'll be a touch shorter ceremony than normal. We think we can chop out a couple of parts that are nice to have, but maybe we need to forego those just to shorten it a touch. And then instead of having two ceremonies like we normally do each spring on that Saturday, we're going to have three ceremonies to spread it out a little bit more. And then actually there will be a fourth and very small ceremony for our Craft Academy students. So it's going to be a busy Saturday, second Saturday in May for our campus. But I am so pleased that we feel like we can, and our team feels like we can get going again. We've talked to SGA about this, a number of others on campus, and it's part of that optimism that there's some blue skies ahead here.
And on that note, we're going to take a quick break here on Open Mic. We'll be right back after this.
The Best of Car Talk is back on WMKY.
I got a V6 with about 153,000 miles on it.
So you bought the car because you liked the way it looked.
Is that why you bought it, Jason?
Well, yeah, but I've come to realize that it's a big, beautiful piece of junk.
The Best of Car Talk, Saturday mornings at 10, Sunday mornings at 6 on WMKY 90.3 FM.
And we're back here on Open Mic here at Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Dr. Jay Morgan, the president of Morehead State University. Thanks again for being here.
Thanks, Leanne. It's a beautiful day on campus.
Now, I know you've been closely following how things are going in Frankfurt this year during the short session of the General Assembly. We had discussed a hope that lawmakers would address performance-based funding. Can you update us on what's going on and how the lawmakers are handling that?
Yes, and I think I can pass along some very, very good news in that accord. As you know, and many of our listening audience know, about 4 years ago, the state of Kentucky came under a new funding formula for higher education. It's a lot like the K-12 SEEK formula, so a kind of a cousin to that. But related to the formula for the past 4 years, we never thought here at Morehead State University the formula treated us very well. We thought that it did not treat some of the smaller universities as well as it probably could have. And I think history is kind of proven that we've lost a little money over the past few years because of that. I am happy to report that it seems like, and I want to give a compliment here, that seems like the Senate and House leadership and also the governor's office have worked over the past couple of months with the university presidents to modify the model just a little bit. It's not a broad move away from the current one, but it does offer some protection to schools like ours. And I think the model recognizes, if these changes go through the General Assembly, the model will recognize that our small universities like ours are important and that we don't need to lose any more money. So I want to thank the members of the working group. I had the pleasure to serve on that group and work with the governor's office, specifically his budget office, Senate and House leadership. And there is a bill that was filed in the Senate a couple of weeks ago that makes these much needed corrections, in our opinion, and we're very supportive of that. It was filed by Senator David Givens. And also, it's working its way through the House right now. And it seems like it has good bipartisan support. And I really think that's going to be a successful bill and it's going to treat us a whole lot better. So with relation to performance funding, I think we're moving to a better place.
I know here at Morehead, we are working towards the fall semester. There are usually classes offered in the Maymester and also the summer classes available most of the time. What's happening with preparation for making sure those are happening this summer?
Mm-hmm. We will be running a very traditional Maymester this year, as well as our traditional summer sessions, just as they're, even in good times, normally delivered. Right now, schedule build has been taking place. Our, as we talked about earlier on the show, that week and a half of weather kind of bumped us off a little bit on getting some things in place for registration. I think that's back on track now. And early next week, we have another meeting, and I think that will begin to move quite nicely for registration to come here very, very shortly. We're going to run a traditional Maymester, a lot of graduate courses, doctoral courses, and undergraduate online courses there. Most all of our summer courses have moved over the years to either a full online format or a high online format with maybe just a couple of in-class classes throughout the summer. So those will be back in the queue. For the fall semester, we'll be registering for that term relatively soon. And fall of 21, we had roughly about 62 or 63% of our classes were face-to-face. The rest of them were online, and that worked for us very well during COVID. We're going to try to push that 62 or 63% face-to-face in the fall of 21 up to around 70%. So a little bit of a return, as we like to say now, a little bit of a return to normal, although it won't quite be 100% maybe of where we were before, but a little bit higher volume of classes face-to-face. So our campus has done real well, and registration will start soon.
The student population is kind of in that weird flux. They're not quite adults. They're not children, and they're getting lost in the cracks as far as like stimulus money. A lot of them didn't receive it, or their parents didn't receive stimulus money for the students who attend the university here. And they're kind of lost in the crack of vaccinations, too. They're way down on the list. Do you know anything about when the state plans to offer to that age group?
Well, as I listen to the news, much like you and our audience does, we feel like vaccinations are being expanded, and really within the past, I'm going to say 2 or 3 weeks, it seems like, at least here in Kentucky, there's been a lot of expansion in vaccinations. I don't have a specific date with a surety when it might be offered to students. I wished I did. Mm-hmm. They fall a little bit in that age range, 18 to 24, 25 years old, typically, of where they're probably not in, the high priority of the 1C category.
Mm-hmm.
1C are, higher education. There's a lot of teachers still getting vaccinated in the K-12 systems. Essential workers, dining service folks. There's a long list within the state distribution plan.
Mm-hmm.
I think the students, by age, and most of them are, generally healthy and strong and can, trudge on, probably are a little bit in the future from what I can tell of reading the plans.
Right, right. Now, I know some decisions are being made about the upcoming semesters to help the university be more accessible. And one of those things is Morehead State will continue to freeze housing rates for the next year. But I know that's not the only thing that's on the table right now.
No, we have frozen our campus residential housing rates for the past 3 years. And we've done so because we thought, that's an area that we can really hold prices down and costs down on for our students. We want to incent students to live in our residential housing complex. We've tried to paint and update and do some work on them over time. There are just so many residence halls on campus that we can't get around to doing them all as quickly as we like. But nevertheless, we think they're a very powerful retention tool and graduation tool. So we want to incent students to live there. I'm pleased to say that we're going to hold housing rates flat again for next year. That will be the fourth year in a row that we've done so. And we are really trying hard to make an education as affordable as possible. We understand there are students in our region and beyond that have a lot of financial needs. And I like to say that we're going to be a university that is very student-focused, student-oriented. Yes, we have to have revenue to operate and to teach and keep our operations going. But we're going to take every effort to keep the cost down. And so we're going to freeze housing rates for the fourth year in a row. We have not decided on tuition yet. Really going to wait about another month till the General Assembly is finished. But I can guarantee if it's going to be raised, it's going to be pretty low. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling that it could be a gentle raise, but it's not going to be very much. And again, that's really in our plan to try to keep the cost of an education as affordable as possible. And we have done a really good job at it, in my opinion, here over the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Now, also, I know that for the fall 20 semester, that the need to take like the ACT, some kind of assessment test in order to be admitted was suspended. Is that going to continue into next year as well?
It will, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because that really is a national trend that we're seeing. Going into the fall of 20, last semester's incoming freshmen, as you know, their last year of high school last spring was significantly disrupted. Many of them came to us with no ACT or SAT score. Testing was suspended either in their home high schools or throughout the summer, and there was just no way to get students in with a test score. So we waived all of them. We're going to do that again for the fall of 21, this incoming fall class. We certainly want students to send us their test score for ACT or SAT, but it is not mandatory for admission. And it's actually not mandatory for scholarships either. What we're using as a substitute for scholarships is we're looking at a person's resume. If they can send us a standardized test score, that's great. We'll utilize that too. But we came up with a grid that really looks more toward a person's total aptitude in scholarship awards for this upcoming fall semester. And Leanne, I have to say, just about every school in the Commonwealth and probably many across our nation are kind of having to come up with those creative ways to get around what used to be, and I underline the word used to be, a big reliance on standardized test scores. So I think standardized test scores are important, but they're not the be-all to end-all. They're a supplement to tell you about the total student. But we really also want to look at high school grades, rank in class, what activities they were in. Do they have grit? Do they have that staying power, that sticking power? Did they play athletics or did they play sports? Were they in the drama club, the speech team? All those attributes really will tell you about the potential of a student just as well, and sometimes even better than an ACT or SAT.
Yeah. Well, it's wonderful that we are able to innovate in the face of adversity, but unfortunately, that's all the time we have here on Open Mic today. Dr. Jay Morgan, president of Morehead State University, thanks again for being on the show.
Thanks, Leanne.
Thanks for tuning in to Open Mic. Our show is produced by Greg Jenkins, and our theme music is Turtle in the Creek, composed by Galen Green and performed by The Wooks. Produced by Morehead State Public Radio with the generous support of listeners just like you. We'll see you next Friday.